And we're holding on Hey Amud Beis, the second line of the wide lines. He wants his gufa. Getting back to something we said earlier on the Amud, Chizkiya Kori B'Tveria Ba'abeser V'Chameser. Chizkiya, the son of Rechia, used to read Megillah in Tveria on the 14th and 15th of Adar. Because he had a topic whether that was a city that was walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun or not. The Gemara says Udi on the Amud that Rebbe knew for a fact that it was, and therefore he leaned only on the 15th, but Chizkiya had such a topic. So the Gemara says, how could Chizkiya have a topic about Tveria, what its status is? In Sefer Yeshua, when it lists the territories of each of the Shevatim, and it mentions it gets over there to the territory of Shevet Naphtali, it says the fortified cities in what became the territory of Naphtali include Hatsidim, Seir, Vachamos, Rakas, Vachinoras, those five, Vachaimalon, Rakas, Zilteria. And we know, as we're going to learn further on in the Gemara, that Rakas is what's now called Tveria. So then Rakas is one of the fortified cities from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. So what's the problem? The answer is Hainu time of Masapele. The reason why Chizkiya had a suffix, Mishum the Chad Gisa Shura the Yamahavas. Because on one side, the wall of Tveria is not an actual wall, it's just the sea. You have Tveria is by the Kinneret, is on the banks of the Kinneret. So on one side, there's no actual wall. There's just, it's protected by the sea itself. If anybody tries to invade, then they can repel them from there. So in that case, the Gemara says, Yehochi amayim asaptalei. Well, in that case, then why does he have a suffix? Bade labchoimim. Then obviously, the Bach, whoever just joined on the phone, by the way, you don't have your name listed, but the Bach as well. So, Hey Amud Beis in the wide lines. So in that case, if the problem with Tveria is that one of the walls is actually the sea coast, then what's the problem? Of course, Vade Lavchoimi. Then of course that's not considered a wall. So there's no question then that Tveria is not considered for that purpose a walled city. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says about the Bote Orechoima, the detail that Torah tells us that if you sell a city house in a walled city, and again, walled for this purpose means walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, and you don't buy it back within a year, then it's cholut, it permanently belongs to the other guy, and you don't even get it back in Yerbal. And the Pasuk says, Asher Loi Choima, that the city has a wall, and that means it has to have an actual wall, the Loi Shur Igar. That means not a wall of roofs, which means, in other words, Rashi says, you can have, like think of, you have here in Crown Heights, for example, you have many blocks, so you have a solid row of houses, one next to the other for an entire block, so the walls of the houses themselves are effectively a wall for the city. So imagine you have a whole city surrounded by blocks and blocks of houses like that. So you would have, then, the walls of those houses form the wall of the city. Nevertheless, that's not considered a wall for this purpose. So Rashi points out the word igar means a roof. So it means not a wall that is made up of walls that have roofs, namely the walls of houses. And saviv, when the pasuk says ashaloi choyma saviv, so that it has a wall surrounding it, that means prat the Tveria, means as opposed to Tveria and places like that, sheyama choymasa, where the wall on one side consists of the sea. So you see clearly that's not bate ar choyma. So what's chizkiya saviv? The answer is le'inin bate ar choyma le mesatelei. Sure, as far as Bate Arachayim, Chizkiya knows this Braisa, so he knows that it's not considered a walled city as far as that. You sell a house in such a city, the usual rules apply, and you get it back in Yoyal. Kikam Asapdala, that in Mikra Megillah. His question is as far as Mikra Megillah. Now, in Megillah's Esther, it doesn't say anything about Choyma, it uses the expression Prozim. Okay, now you heard him about Prozim. So my Prozim or mine will coffin, Dichtivi Gabi Mikra Megillah. So when we say in the Megillah that the Prozim, the people in unwalled cities, have a certain day for celebrating for him, and okay, it doesn't say explicitly in so many words in the Pasuk that the people in walled cities have a different day, but it says that there is a different day, and as we learned previously, it means that by elimination, we said it means that the people in the walled cities celebrate Dafka on the 15th. So what do we mean by Prozim and the opposite of Prozim? Is the key fact that people who live in unwalled cities, their houses are exposed to view. They're not surrounded by a wall which hides them from view. Well, Bahonami Megalia. Well, then Tveria is also exposed to view. If you're boating on the Kinneret over there and you see the city of Tveria, then you're going to see all the houses in it because there's no wall on that side closing it off. So therefore, that would make it considered a regular city. Maybe not miglu exposed, but miglu protected. The key thing is, are the houses in the city protected or not? Well, then Tveria is protected because it has the sea on one side serving as a wall. That's why Chizkiah had the suffix, and that's why he celebrated Purim on both days. So you have, as we talked about yesterday, discussion among the Rishonim in places like this and other places that we're going to mention now in the Gemara, where you have such a suffix. Nowadays, you have many of the cities of Eretz Yisrael have such a suffix. Tveria, we have the special case we're describing over here. But you have a lot of cities in Eretz Yisrael where we know the original city was walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun. But we don't know, is the modern city in the same place as the ancient one? For example, we learned on Daf Dalad, on the top, that Lud is one of the cities that's surrounded by a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Nowadays, there's a city of Lud in Eretz Yisrael. But is it in the same place? Not necessarily. In fact, many times, archaeologists have dug up what seems to be the ancient city, and it's a good half a mile or a mile away from the current one. The only one that we know for sure is still in the same location is Yerushalayim. So, with Hebron, but the vort is, so we know, of course, where Ma'aretz Machpelah is, but you think about it, the Pasuk describes that Ma'aretz Machpelah is al pnei Hebron, meaning in front of Hebron, but nowadays, Ma'aretz Machpelah is smack in the middle of the city. So therefore, lav dafka, that what we know now as Hebron, is in the same place as ancient Hebron. So what happens is, in many of those places, they do in fact, lay in the Megillah on the 14th and 15th. The question then becomes, in such places, what do you do as far as a brach? Some of the Rishonim learn, for example, the Torah mentions the name of his brother, Rabbi Yechiel, that you wouldn't make a bracha on either day in those places. Because either day is going to be a suffix. How can you say a bracha? On the other hand, the Rambam says that you make a bracha on the 14th, because most of the world does read on the 14th, and that's the accepted halacha. So in such places, they lay on the 14th by night and by day with a bracha, and then they lay on the 15th again by night and by day without a bracha.
So you have a discussion
among Rishonim whether this whole thing about walled cities, to what we talked about at the beginning of the sector, how much does it necessarily apply to cities outside Eretz Yisrael? So yeah, we talked about at the very beginning of the sector, there was Baghdad, Istanbul, they talked about Krakow and Prague and whatever. There were a number of cities where there seemed to have been a suffix about those as well, and some of those places they lay on the 15th without a bracha. There are Rishonim who learn that the whole concept really only applies to cities in Eretz Yisrael, plus, of course, the city of Shushan, even though that's outside Eretz Yisrael, but that's where the Nes actually took place. Anyway, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Rav Asi kore Megillah b'chutzel b'arbeisar v'chamesar. So, for example, Rav Asi used to lay Megillah in Hutzel on the 14th and the 15th, mistakele imoketes chanim mersi yishom enun hi yiloi, again, because you have a suffix. Ikadamar, another version is that Amr Rav Asi, that there was no suffix. Rav Asi says, Hai Hutzel, the base Binyamin, the Hutzel of the territory of Binyamin, Mokepas Kami Mimos Yeshua, and therefore you would lay on the 15th. Now, you actually do have, though, Tosfos, earlier in the Masechta, has the Girsa of Hutzel, or not necessarily, they don't explicitly say, but it seems from the way they discuss, that they don't have the word debased binyamin in their Girsa, and in fact, therefore, the question is, where is this Hutzel? Is it in Eretz Yisrael, or is it not? The Gemara mentions in a few places a city in Babel called Hutzel. So, or is this the Hutzel that we're talking about over here? If it is, then that shows that, yes, even cities outside Eretz Yisrael, if they're walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, then you read on the 15th. If not, if we do have the gears of the base in Yemen, then maybe Taka means only cities in Eretz Yisrael, but not necessarily in foot forests. Okay. We mentioned before about Tveria. We said that in Tanakh and Sefer Yeshua, it's called Rakas. So now the Gemara is going to digress to talk about that thing. Amr Rav Yechanan, not just Rakas, but several of the other cities that are mentioned in that. Several of the other cities that are mentioned in those psukim. The Gemara is going to now try to identify them. Amr Rav Yechanan, Ki Havena Talia, when I was a young boy, Amina Milsa de Sheilna La Savaya, I said something, and I asked the elders of my time, the elder Tamar Chachamim of my time about this, the Ishtakach Kabasi. And it turned out that what I said, what I assumed, was correct. Namely, I went through as follows. We said, in that list of cities, we have Hamas, Rakas, and Kinoris. So what are all those? What are each of those cities? What are they called in Rabbi Yechanan's times? So Hamas Zutveria. So he explained, Hamas refers to Tveria. The Lama Nikoshmo Hamas, why is it called that? Al-Shum Chame Tveria, because of the hot springs of Tveria. So therefore, the place was called Hamas in the times of Tanakh. The Gemara will talk about further on why it's called Tveria in later times. Rakas Zutzipori. Then Rabbi Yochanan continued, Rakas can be identified as Zipori, which is, we have it in many places in Shas. Rebbe lived there for several years. Rebbe lived there for several years, and there were many Chachamim, Rabbi Yossi lived there, etc. The Lomanikoshma Rakas, why is it called that? Mishim the Midalia Kiraksa Dinara, because it's raised up like the bank of a river. Tzipori is on the top of a mountain, so therefore, like the bank of a river is higher than the riverbed, the same way Tzipori is higher than the rest of the territory around it. Then Kineres Zuginois, so the third one mentioned in that pasuk, or the last one mentioned in that pasuk, Kineres, is the place that in Rabbi Yochanan's times was called Ginoisar, by the someplace near the Kineret. The Loma Nikashma Kineres, so why in the pasuk is it called Kineres? The Misiki Peira Kukola Kinori, because the fruit of it is as sweet as the sound of a kinner. So the kinner is a harp or a violin or whatever. So the fruit of this place was called that. The Oruch gives another possibility that kinori can also mean a kind of tree which was known to have very sweet fruit. So the fruits of the other trees from there were just as delicious as the fruit of a kinner tree. By the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the Medrash mentions that's why the place was called Ginoisar. Ginoisar is short for Gan Sar, meaning it's a place where they had gardens that are fit for sarim, that are fit for princes. Anyway, so that was how Rabbi Yochanan identified those three cities. Omar Rabba, but Rabba says that doesn't work. Mi ikal amando Omar Rakas lav Tveria. How could anybody say that Rakas is not Tveria, where Rabbi Yochanan wants to say that Rakas is Tzipori and Hamas from that pasuk is Tveria? But we know not. When a person passes away, when a prominent Talmud Chacham passes away in Babel, then when they hear the news there in Eretz Yisrael, they say the Hesped as follows: Gadol hu b'Sheshach, he was great. He is great in Sheshach. Sheshach is a nickname for Babel. It's actually, you take the letters of Babel and turn them by Atbash into the word Sheshach. We actually find the Navi Yirmiyah uses that a couple of times. There's a couple of them in the verse against Babel, where instead of calling it outright Babel, he calls it Sheshach. Anyway, so they would say in their Hesped, this person was great in Sheshach. He was a great Talmud Chacham or Baal Maisim in Sheshach. The Shemloi Barakas, and he has a name. He's famous in Rakas, meaning Tveria, because most of the Chachamim at the time lived in Tveria. That was the center of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael at that time. And another example, the Chimaski Aroin Alahasam, when they bring the Aroin of somebody who passed away in Babel, and they bring him to be buried in Tveria, in Eretz Yisrael, Safi Laifafi, they make the Hesped as follows: Oy have a Sridim, you who love the Sridim, literally Sridim means remnants, so Rashi teaches that Oy have a Yisrael, you people who love your fellow Jews. On the side of it here, it brings from the Oruch specifically that Sridim means Tamar Chachamim. The Gemara itself mentions that in other places, in Sanhedrin, for example, we have it now in Ein Yaakov that we were just learning during the week. That Sridim is a nickname for Tamar Chachamim. So you who love the Tamar Chachamim, Yoshvei Rakas, you who live in Rakas, meaning again Tveria, Suva Kablu Harubei Oimek, come out and greet those who were killed in the death. Meaning Babel, which is a very low-lying country compared to Eretz Yisrael, which is mountainous. And a third one, so Marashah says the vort is, in other words, not killed, well, killed in the sense, Minashamayim, that they died in Babel. Marashah explains we have three different types of it here. You have the Chachamim who passed away in Babel and are buried in Babel. That's what the first Hesped was. We just say the Shemloi Barakas, they have a name, they have a reputation in Rakas, but they're not actually being brought here. The second group are the ones who passed away in Chutzlaret, and they have the S'chus to be brought to Eretz Yisrael. We're saying that these people were, so to speak, killed Minashamayim in the Oymek, in the depths. They didn't have the schus in their lifetime to come to Eretz Yisrael, but at least they're coming now. And then the third one we're going to mention is Rav Zera, who grew up in Babel. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael and lived out the rest of his life there as one of the great Chachamim. And then we're going to have a third kind of Hesped on him, also mentioning Rakas. Ki noch nafshe de Rav Zera, the third one is when Rav Zera passed away. Potach alayahu sakdana, one of the people giving a Hesped began the Hesped as follows. We have to remember that these Hespedim, the purpose of them is to get people to realize the enormity of what happened, that they should cry over it. So they would like to, they would use these poetic style and whatever in order to get the people to realize it and to cry. So he started off, Eretz Shinar Harav Yolda, the land of Shinar, which is Babel, conceived and gave birth to this great Talmud Chacham, Rav Zera. Eretz Tzvi Gidla Shashuel, the beautiful land, meaning the desirable land, meaning Eretz Yisrael, raised her precious thing, because Rav Zeira eventually moved to Eretz Yisrael. Now Rakas should say, woe to me, woe to her, because she lost her precious kavim. So we see again, Rakas is Tveria. None of this fits with Tzipori, because there was a Jewish community in Tzipori, but it wasn't nearly as big and important as the one in Tveria. So therefore, how can Rabbi Yochanan be saying that Rakas is Tzipori? Ela Omer Rava. No, we have to re-identify as follows. Hamas Zuchame Gror. Or Gedder, as another gear. So Hamas doesn't refer to Tveria itself, but rather Chame Gror, or Chame Gedder, which it is. It's a place near Tveria. Even now, they have hot springs over there, they have a whole spa over there, so it's a few miles away from Tveria. Rakas to Tveria, and Rakas itself is Tveria, like we just said. Kineres zu Ginoisa, fine. Of Rabbi Yechanan's definition, Kineres does refer to Ginoisa, that we can accept. So, the Lomanik Shmo Rakas, so why is Tveria called Rakas? Shafilavre, Konin Shabbat, Malayan Mitzvahs, Karimin, because even the empty people, even the Amiaratsin in Tveria, are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. So, in other words, the word Rakas is related to Rekonin. So Marsha says, okay, where do you get the Malayan Mitzvahs, Karimin? He says, because, yeah, where do we learn the Chlal, this concept that Afilavre, Konin Shabbat, Malayan Mitzvahs? We learn it from a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, where Hashem praises the Jewish people, Kifelach Horimon Rakosik. Your rakosech, which the simple meaning means the temples, like the sides of your head, are like a pomegranate. So therefore, we understand that once we're saying rakas, referring to rekonin, then automatically the rest of the pasuk follows that they're Malayan mitzvahs kareem.
It brings Elmek. He says they were killed because they left Eretz Yisrael. It's a battle.
So. Well, okay, I don't know who says that. Marsha doesn't say they left Eretz Yisrael, just they lived there. Okay, whatever.
Rekonin means rake, doesn't it?
It means that they're empty, but we're saying they're not so empty as you think. They really are full of mitzvahs, as a pomegranate is full of seeds.
Yeah, well, so that's just the opposite. How can you say rake means empty, and on the other hand, say it's full?
Because they're empty of Torah. They haven't learned very much Torah, but they're full of mitzvahs. In particular, I think we can say, because there were so many Talmidei Chachamim who lived in Tveria, inevitably, the people over there, first of all, they come into contact with the Chachamim. They learn, they're able to see what they're doing. They're able to learn from them just in the marketplace or wherever. They're doing things to help them out. You know, think of it. You know, one of the Chachamim needs a plumber or, you know, needs somebody to do some work for them. They call in one of these Amei Aretz. So, you know, they're helping. They're being Mishamish to the Chachamim, which is a big thing in itself. So for that reason alone, they're full of mitzvahs. We're saying they're not as full of Torah as they should be, but they are full of mitzvahs. Now, what were you saying, Yaakov?
Was it Harugi? Can you say Adam ki Amud Beholhel? That's talking about a person kills himself.
Maybe not they that killed themselves learning Torah. Could be. All right. Anyway, Rabbi Yirmiyah says the other way around. So in other words, Rava or Rabba is saying that the real essential name of a place is Tveri, and it has also a name Rakas to tell us how great the people are, even the Pasha Yidden who live there. Rabbi Yirmiyah says the other way around. Rakas Shema, the real name of the place is Rakas. Why is it called Tveria? She Yeshevis Tabura Shal Eretz Yisrael, because it's in the navel, like in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Now, I mean, you look at a map of Israel nowadays, it's nowhere near the middle, it's towards the edge. But when you consider that Eretz Yisrael is really supposed to go all the way up to Nahar Pras, then yeah, Tveria comes out somewhere pretty close to the middle. Now, the fact is, history books, Lahavdil, tell us, and, Lahavdil, the Medrash in Bereishis Rabba tells us as well, that really Tveria is named that after the Roman Emperor Tiberius. It was rebuilt and re-fortified, whatever, in his times, and so it was named in his honor. But the Gemara over here wants to find a Jewish root for it, because, for one thing, why should a city in Eretz Yisrael bear a name of a Goyisha Emperor? So therefore, the Gemara wants to find reasons, Alpi Torah, reasons based on Lashon Kodesh, why the city should be called that. Rava Amar, or Rabba, says Rakas Shema, another possibility, it really is named Rakas, like Rabbi Yirmiyah said, but a different reason why it's called Tveria. The Lama Nikoshima Tveria, Shetova Re'iyosa, because the seeing of it is good. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says there are a lot of orchards and whatnot in it. So it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place to look at. Actually, not Rashi. Tosfos rather says that. Shoyisham Ganes Bardesim. There are orchards and gardens over there, and therefore it's a beautiful place. Marashah says a different word because the Chachamim lived there. Therefore, it's beautiful to see them getting together and learning Torah. Okay. Next, Omer Ze'era, so let's talk more about this business of identifying cities in Eretz Yisrael. Kitroin Zutziporin. There's a city that's mentioned in the territory of Zvolun called Kitroin. So that is identical with what we call nowadays Tziporin. So why is it called Tzipori? Because it sits on top of a mountain like a bird perching on top of a tree. So the Gemara says, Kitron Tzipori? How could you say that Kitron is Tzipori? Well, Kitron v'chelke shel Zvolun Havoi. We know that Kitron was in the territory of Shevet Zvolun. Very appropriate, all of this. You know, we just had this week's parasha with the brachas, where Yaakov is telling them which territories they're going to have in Eretz Yisrael. The psukim at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim describe how many of the shvatim did not do such a good job getting rid of, like this had a mitzvah, you have to dispossess and then drive out or kill all of the shiva amamim that are in Eretz Yisrael, in your respective territories. But there were a number of the shvatim, the psukim go on to say, who didn't do that. Some of them left some of the Canaanim alive, and they made them pay taxes and work for them and whatever. And the upshot is that they ended up looting from those goyim, Avod Zarah and other things, so it created lots of problems. Anyway, so among them, the Pasuk mentions that Zvulun did not dispossess the goyim who lived in Kitroin and Nahalo. So we know that Kitroin is in the territory of Zvulun, and let's show that Tziporri can't be in the territory of Zvulun. Because Zvulun Misraim al Midosav Haba, we know that Zvulun was complaining about what was given to him. Midosav, mean the Midah, the Mazel that was given to him in Hashemayim, and he didn't like it. What is that? Shenema, the Pasuk says, later on in Shoftim, in Devarah Shira, Zvulun Am Cheref Nafshe Lomus. The whole Pasuk goes, Zvulun Am Cheref Nafshe Lomus. Zvulun is a people that were going on the Siris Nev, literally Cheref Nafshe Lomus means like they scorn their own lives to die. In other words, they're willing to go on the Siris Nefesh to fight against Sisra's army. And the Pasuk continues, Naphtali Amirome Sadeh, Naphtali is on the heights of the field. So Pashat Pshat, it means that Zvulun and Naphtali were among the soldiers that they gathered together to fight against Sisra, and they fought with the Siris Nefesh. But the Gemara is understanding it differently. Zvulun Am Cheref Nafshe Lomus, where that Zvulun scorns their life and they just want to die, they can't stand what they're living with. Matam, why Mishum de Naphtali Amirom Yisodeh? Because they have a complaint over the fact that Naphtali has the heights of the fields. Meaning, what's going on? Omer Zvulun Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that Zvulun, Shevet Zvulun, complain to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam. La'achai Nasata Lahem Sodeh Siframim. My brothers, for example, Naphtali, you gave fields and vineyards. V'li Nasata Horim of Bois. Me, you gave mountains and hills, which are harder to cultivate. You gave them broad lands. You gave them lands in general. My territory of Eretz Yisrael is lots of sea and lots of rivers. What am I going to do with those? You have in this week's parasha, right? Zvulun b'choif yamim yishkan. He's going to live by the sea coast. V'yalchos be'al tzidon. And Ed is going to go all the way to Tzidon. This is along the coast. So it's not really such good land. So Marsha says, why is this mentioned specifically in Shiras Devorah? Because what happened was, up till now, this is how many people traveled long distance in those days. People from Shevet Zvulun didn't necessarily know what there is to be found in the other Shvatim. But now, when they're going together with Shevet Naphtali and fighting against Sisra, for the first time, they're traveling into another Shevet territory, and they see, look at their territory compared to mine, look at Naphtali's compared to mine, then all of a sudden they start complaining. So that's why this is in the middle of that Shira. Yes.
The haluk was done
al pi'a divor, of course, but now you have. I guess the point is that in Devorah's times, 100 odd years later, 200 years later, then they're complaining.
Zvulun was doing business, and she went ships with
either. They still wanted to have fields and vineyards, I think that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, Omelois, but Hashem tells it. It could also be, I mean, the Zvulun that we're talking about over here may be the original Zvulun, the son of Yaakov, that when Yaakov tells him, Zvulun, Machayf Yaakov Yishkan, maybe right then he's saying, I don't like the idea. Anyway, Omer Lois, Hashem tells him, don't you worry. Kulam Srichan Lachai, they chilozin. Remember that all of them are going to need you for the chilozin, because the chilozin lives in the sea, and you need it for tchelas. It's very expensive, because you need a lot of the creatures in order to make even a little amount of the dye. So therefore, people are going to be doing lots of, all the rest of the Jewish people need tchelas for tzitzis, so therefore, they're going to be doing lots of business with you. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, in Moshe Rabbeinu's brachas to the Shevatim, he says about Zvulun, Amim how you crow, the people will call at the mountain, which Rashi mentions over there, a whole explanation about how Goyish merchants are going to come because of Zvulun, they're going to come to Yerushalayim, etc. Anyway, but the Pasuk continues that they're given the bracha, Usfune Tmunei Chol. So Sfune and Tmune are both expressions meaning hidden. Tonin of Yosef, Sfune Zechilozen. The word Sfun, besides meaning hidden, also means important. So the Sfune refers to the Chilozen, which is very important and very expensive. And Tmune Zutris, when it says concealed, means tris, which is a type of fish. Rashi and many other of the Rishonim identify it as tuna. So a lot of, there's lots of tuna fish that's easily caught off the coast of Zvulun's territory, and therefore you can sell that to the other Shvatim and make a lot of money. And when the Pasuk mentions the sand, that means not just any sand, but the kind of good quality sand that you can make clear glass out of. In those times, clear glass was a very rare and expensive thing. Most of the time, it was very easy, relatively, to make colored glass, but clear glass was very rare. In fact, the Gemara says it disappeared, or almost disappeared, after the Churban. So like this, Hashem is telling Zvulun that don't you worry, you have all of these expensive and sought-after things in your territory. So Zvulun says, okay, but Hashem, who's going to inform me about it? What happens, for example, other people are going to come and take the chilozen or take the sand without telling me and without paying? So then I'm not going to gain anything from it. So Hashem continues and then tells him, as the pasuk, the earlier part of that pasuk that ends with Sfunei Tmunei Chol, earlier in that pasuk it says, Shom Yizbechu Zivchei Tzedek, there they will bring korbanos of righteousness, which means just like korbanos cannot be from stolen materials, simon zeyahelah, you will have the simon. Kol anotum of chav loydomim, anybody who takes the chilazin or any of these natural resources from you without paying for it, einim moyov pachmatish loykum, it won't help him in his business at all. He won't end up gaining any profit from it. So when you see that there are people who are selling chilazin dye or whatever, and they're not making any money from it, you'll know those are the people who stole it illegally from your territory, who came and poached on your territory. And the dye will lose its color or whatever it is. Marsha learns actually a little differently. He says the vote is not that Zvulun is worried that people are going to go poach it from his territory and take it illegally. He's worried about what happens, for example, as far as the chilazin in particular. People can always counterfeit it using kola ilan, using indigo, which looks very similar to tzelis. So Hashem tells him, don't you worry, anybody who tries that is not going to be matzliach in their parnasa, and therefore, again, they won't do it anymore. They won't try it. Anyway, so we're still in the middle of trying to figure out how we know Tzipori is not part of Zvulun's territory. Now that we've established that Zvulun is complaining that he doesn't have fields and vineyards like most of the rest of Eretz Yisrael, that he has seacoast, well then, the East Afrodite Kitruin Zutzipori, if you're going to tell me like Rava said, that Zaira said, that Kitruin is Tzipori, am I Misraim Amidosa? Then what's Zvulun complaining about? Well, I'll have you Tzipori Milsadadi for Tuba. Tzipori is a very good place. In particular, the fact that it's on top of a mountain means the air there is very pure and clear, so it's a very good climate. What's the problem? You're going to say that Zvulun's problem is that Tzipori doesn't have the Zavas Chol of Advash that you have elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael. Namely, when the Pasuk describes Eretz Yisrael, this coming week's parasha, for example, is the first time where it does it. And that's Zavas Chol of Advash. The Rashi brings over here from the Gemara in Ksuvos that it means the goats eat date or eat figs off the tree. So then juice, syrup, like honey-like syrup is flowing down from the figs. The milk is flowing out of the udders of the goats. You literally have milk flow. You literally have milk and honey flowing on the ground. So you're going to say maybe Zvulun is complaining about that, that his part of Eretz Yisrael doesn't have that.
When would that be if it's on a mountain?
Well, maybe, in other words, maybe it's not a climate that's conducive for growing figs. Yeah. But, no, I personally saw the area of Zavas Chol of Advash in and the pastures around Tzipori. It was an area of 16 by 16 mil, which a mil being about a little over about half a mile, 3/5 of a mile or whatever. So you're talking about? You're talking about 10 miles by 10 miles. That's a substantial area. You're going to say maybe the problem is okay, there's Zavas Chol of Advash over there, but not proportionately as much as the other Shvatim have. No. va amr rabba va khana amr bechana vidi di khazi vi zavas khol va bash de khol ar Israel. I saw the zavas khol va bash throughout Eretz Israel. By the way, we have to keep in mind, these Chachamim, Rish Lakish and Yad Baba Chana, are living long after the Churban. The Gemara actually mentions in Ksubas that after the Churban, there was a drop in these things. These things were not as much as they were before, but in other words, there was still, in their time, there was still enough of a vestige of it that they were able to see it. So he says, I saw the Zavas Chol Vash throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael, Vahavya, and if you add it all up, if you add up all the different areas, Kimi Bei Kuviat Akled Tobakni, it's the equivalent of what would be in Bavel, from Bay Kuvi until Akra the Tobakni, and Rashi says that Akra is a ford in a river. So these are two landmarks that they knew of in Babel. Esru Metavti Parasi Urka, the total length is 22 parasa, which is there's 4 mil in a parasa, so 88 mil. Oposia Shita Parasi, and the width is 6 parasa, which would be 24 mil. So now if you take that area and divide it, and you take that area and divide it by 12, from 12 Shvatim, you'll find that proportionally, Zvulun, who has 16 by 16 mil, which is 16 by 16 is 256 square mil, proportionally, he has a lot more than the other Shvatim. So what's he complaining about? So doesn't that show that Sipori can't be in Zvulun's territory, which would mean it can't be the city of Kitzroim, which we said is? The Gemara says, Afilohochi, no, the answer is that even so, Sodus Akram Madifalai, even though, Zvulun would still have preferred to have fields and vineyards. Very nice. We have Zavas Chol of Vash, but I'd still rather have fields and vineyards that we can cultivate rather than seacoast and rather than Zavas Chol of Vash area. So yes, Tzipori is part of his territory, but he wasn't satisfied with that.
Is it really up to him to decide what area is his?
No.
Right,
but he's complaining to Hashem, why'd you have to do it that way? And you find, for example, you find that that Ephraim and Manasseh came to Yeshua to complain that our territory is too small, we need more. And Yeshua explained to them that you don't. You actually have plenty of land. It's just full of forests. Clear the forests, you'll have plenty of room. But you could have, but they could be complaining, and, you know.
The population, also the size of their...
There actually, you have a big machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban, how it worked in terms of assigning territories to the Shvatim. The Pasuk says, well, Rav Tavre Nachlose, V'lamat Tamit Nachlose, that larger gets larger and smaller gets smaller. Does that mean that each Shevet's territory depends on the size of their population when they came into Eretz Yisrael? Or does it mean, I think the Ramban learns, that all of them got equal sized territories? It means that some Shvatim, the individual plots assigned to individual people, are larger than they are in other Shvatim. So mind you, I mean, Zvulun is one of the large, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, Zvulun was one of the large Shvatim. They numbered 60,000 and some. We're not talking about them complaining about the size of their territory, but about the quality of the land. What were we going to say about my
question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Regarding the size of each Shevet's territory, was that assigned by the Edishto or it's on Yeshua's own decision?
So it was decided by Hashem. The Goyal in particular, what they had was, the Pasuk describes how they sent out commissioners to survey Eretz Yisrael and figure out the respective, and then figure out the respective values of the land in different places in the country in order that everybody should get more or less something equal. So again, there you have a machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban, whether is it that a larger Shevet got a larger territory or territory that was worth more, or is it that all the Shvatim got territories that are of equal size or of equal value, and then some Shvatim, therefore you have the people have smaller plots than others. And there's a lot to
so what was
that.
It?
So they have a machlokes.
What was the role?
You know what? What?
What was the role of the Eibishter?
That's the role of the Eibishter. He decided. You know what? When we get in a few years from now, Beis Hashem, we'll get to Masechta Bava Basra.
Well, we'll show. Remember everything.
And Beis Hashem, we'll talk about it in greater detail there. Right now, let's go on.
Yeah, I understand, but for the time being, the Eibishter's role was to design exactly the area or the location within the land of Israel. What was the Eibishter's role there?
That was the Eibishter's role: was to decide the area and the location. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. So that's the answer. And the Gemara says, in fact, Dekanami, in fact, you can prove that from the words of the Pasuk, that after all, that Zvolim's problem is not that they don't have Zavas Chol Vadash, but that they don't have fields and vineyards. Yichdiv Naftali Amiroi Meisadia. Because the complaint was that Naftali has the heights of the fields. In other words, Naftali has fields that I don't. And why not? So Shlami Naft, that proves that that's Zvolim's problem.
Only because they saw the neighbors.
So now that's the thing. Arshal says, once they saw their neighbors, then they realized what they're missing out on.
That proves what?
That shows, that's Marshall says, that proves that they're complaining about that they don't have fields like the neighboring Shvatim. And yeah, Marshall says, as we said before, particularly, why did they first realize this in the times of Devarah? Because now you have a substantial number of them that traveled into the territory of Naphtali to go join in the fight against Sisera, and therefore, for the first time, they discover, many of them probably for the first time in their life, discovered, you know what, our land is not really like Naphtali's and like the other Shvatim.
So how does it prove it?
It proves that, therefore, that they're complaining about sodes, that they're complaining about fields, which the Sephardi doesn't have, because it's on the top of a mountain. And the rest of their territory, which is near the seacoast, also doesn't have it.
But Sephardi is not the only area of Zvulun. There's other areas that Zvulun has.
The central areas, and the rest of their area is mostly on the seacoast. So, therefore, they don't have sodes Sekrumim to the same extent as the other Shvatim. Okay. Going on.
The other Shvatim can respond. They don't have as much...
Right now, Hashem gave a different answer to Zvulun. No, let's go on. If you want to discuss it later, let's discuss it later. But right now, let's move on. Since we're talking about places in Eretz Yisrael and also places on the seacoast, so now another very important city in Eretz Yisrael that was on the seacoast was the city of Kesem. Now it is called Caesarea. So now we're going to talk about it a little bit. Amr of Abahu, the Ekron Te'oker, there's a Navur from Tzfania, one of the Treyos, who says that Ekron will be uprooted. Now, in the simple sense, Ekron is one of the cities of Plishtim on the southern coast of Eretz Yisrael. But he's doubting that Ekron, over here in this passage, refers to Zu Kesari Bas Edron. This refers to Kesari, the daughter of Edron. So we know throughout Tanakh, throughout Shas and the Drashim and all, Edron is the Romans. So Kesari was the main city of the Romans in Eretz Yisrael. Or their main base in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Marshall points out the word okar, which means to uproot, is the same gematria as the word kesari. So therefore, the word ekren te'okar of the pasuk can be referring to kesari. Shehi yesheves ben acholos. That place is located among the sands. It's on the sea coast of Eretz Yisrael. Vehi hoisei yosted tkur l'Yisrael b'mei Yevonim. During the time when the Greeks ruled over Eretz Yisrael, it was like a nail stuck in place among Jews. In other words, it was a place where they were full of goyim who were harassing and causing trouble for the Jews. When eventually the kingdom of the Hashmonaim became powerful and defeated them, and they made it into a Jewish city, they called it the captured tower of Shir. So there's a few different gerusos over here. Shir would mean that it was like a place where they sang. On the side over here, it brings a gerusa that's supposed to be sur, or sur, which could mean sur as in it's associated with sur, the city, the city of Tyre, north of Eretz Israel. Or it could mean sur, Tos Vishachna Anglia explained that it means Meloshim Tsurim, Meloshim, that they were troublesome to the Jews. Then the Oruch brings a Gerusa Shed, that it was a place where Shadim dwelt, maybe like after they kicked out the Goyim and the place was empty for a while, then Shadim took it over. Whatever the case, that was the case. So eventually what happened was, when the Romans took over Eretz Yisrael, eventually in the next generation after that, the city of Caesarea was built over there.
Is that the same Caesarea we have now?
That's the same Caesarea more or less that you have now. You have all the Roman ruins over there and whatnot. Because we're not saying that it was originally called Caesarea. We're saying that originally it was called something else. We don't know. When the Hashmonaim captured it, they renamed it Achidas Migdal Tzur, or Shade, or whatever. Then when it was built up as the city of Caesarea, then it was named Caesarea after the Caesars of Rome. So, in fact, Megillas Tainis lists the day when they conquered it as one of the Yom Tovim of Megillas Tainis, although I don't remember what the date was. I think it was sometime in Adar, but I don't remember for sure. Anyway, Omer of Yosef Bechanina, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik? V'hasiroisi dom of Mitiv, and another posik talking about what's going to be Limosa Mashiach. I will remove his blood from his mouth, talking about the Goyim who are harassing the Jewish people. But she quits of Niben Shinov. I'll remove his disgusting things from between his teeth. The Nisha Gamhulei Lekenu, and he will also be left in honor of Hashem. So what does that mean? Basiroisi Damarapiv Zebes Bamiya Shalahem. That refers to the place where the Goyim have their Bamiya, which means like their monuments. In particular, it means, for example, like the places where they bring korbanos, where Rashi on the pasuk mentions, either it means the place where they bring the blood of their korbanos in honor of their getchkes, or places where they spill Jewish blood. So that's that. That's dumb of Nitiv. But she quotes them the base shin of Zebes Gal Yishalan, the disgusting things from between their teeth. That refers to the places where they were, to their high places of Avodah Zarah. Base Gal Yishalan means a high place. And Vinisha, so those are going to be removed. Vinisha Gamhulay Lakenu, and it's going to be left for in honor of Hashem, meaning Elu Batik Nesias, or Batim Medrashis, Shabbat Edom, means that the shuls and the Batim Medrash that are in Edom are still going to be intact and are still going to be serving Hashem Limaisa Mashiach. So the places of Avodah Zarah and the other places that they were using for their things will be destroyed, but the shuls and the Batim Medrash in Rome and in all the other places in Edom will be left. And the next part, the same pasuk continues, the same pasuk in Zechariah continues, V'hoyok Aluf B'Yehuda, it will be like the Aluf, like the leaders of Yehuda, the Ekron to Yevusi, and Ekron, which we just said before, refers to Caesarea, will be like Yevusi, where Yevusi is another name for Yerushalayim, because the people, the Goyim who lived there were called Yevusim. So what does that mean? Elo Tartirois for Kyukasoyas for the Edom. This refers to the Tartirois and Kyukasoyas that are in Edom. We'll explain in a second what those are. Shasidin, Sore Yehuda, Lalaman, Behem, Torah, Baramim, the princes of Yehuda, so that's what it means, Aluf B'Yehuda, the leaders of Yehuda, are going to, in the future, be teaching Torah and them in public. Now, what are Tauti Yoris for Kaukasois? So Tosfos explains, gives an explanation, and Rabbi Hananel says essentially the same thing, that it means that Tauti Yoris are places where they worship Avodah Zarah. So we're using the word Tauti Yoris as like a derogatory term for them. It might actually be related to, there's a word in Greek, teratos, or something like that, means a monster, a deformed creature. So maybe that would mean what Tosfos means over here, that's Washington Heights. And Kirkisois would be bathrooms. However, Tosfos says, what do you mean that? Lamed behem Torah, but Abba, you're going to teach Torah in public in such places. There's such places that need to be destroyed. No, what if Bimhed of Yemen, or Tosfos says, there should be wound and destroyed, Bimhed of Yemen. What it means, rather, Tosfos says, Tauti Yoris and Tauti Sois would be places where Goyim gather. In which case, it might mean, you look at the words Tauti Yoris and Tauti Sois, they very much resemble the words feeders and circuses. So it might be, according to Tosfos' preferred explanation, that that's what the Gemara means, the Goyish feeders and their circuses. Now, this gets into an interesting point where Tosfos is saying over here, as a blanket statement, that how could it be that disgusting places where they worship Avodah Zarah are going to be used to teach Torah in public? This gets into the question, are you allowed to take a place like that was used for Avodah Zarah or for other things against Torah and use it as a shul or a Beis Medrash? So in fact, for example, you have the Tosfos mentions this, the Ritva mentions the point that how could it be that you would be able to learn Torah in such a place? On the other hand, the Magen Avraham says, maybe it's not such a problem. After all, it's a building attached to the ground, and Mechubar Ein Nesser, just because the place that was attached to the ground, is used for Avodah Zarah, doesn't necessarily make it also. On the other hand, the Dogum Meiravava, which is a Pirush on Shulchan Aruch from the Node of Yehuda, disagrees with that and says, based on the Tosfos over here, it should be completely also. And there's a huge amount of discussion about it among Achronim, about the details of this. Rav Moshe has a couple of Truvas of it, the Tzitz Eliezer has a Truva about it, Minchas Yitzchok has, they all discuss the pros and cons of it. One second, let's finish what we're saying before. So many of them say, in fact, based on so one answer is that maybe the Magen Avraham, that maybe Tosfos is not saying it's actually also Tosfos say. I can't imagine that it would be. Doesn't mean it's actually also per se. So therefore that might be a reason for a heter for it, especially what the Magen Avraham is pointing out, that actually all they're attached to the ground. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe Tosfos is saying it is actually flat out also, or the Ritva is saying that it's flat out also. So in fact, a number of the post-Machronim talk about that it really is questionable in halacha. So maybe, the Dievid, if they did it, then fine, you could be able to dab it into the place. But maybe not that you should do it l'chatchila. One of the places the question came up with early on is in the 1850s, a shul opened in the Lower East Side where they bought a church and converted it into the shul. And they asked the Sholem Yeshiv and asked other Rabbanim of that period, what's the halacha about it? Again, the Sholem Yeshiv was willing to be make on it and say that maybe, again, Tosfos is not saying it's flat out also, but on the other hand, as I said, Rav Moshe and Tzitz Eliezer and all are very uncomfortable with the idea. They say even more so, sometimes you have a place, which is they rent a place temporarily to use as a shul or a Beis Medrash or something. Imagine, like, for example, you take, let's say, a dance hall or something and you use it for that purpose. There they say even more so, I mean, it's still staying at the place of Tumah afterwards, you're using it temporarily for that, how can you do that? On the other hand, again, you do have poskim that are more lenient about it. You have, you know, nowadays, for example, you have, you go to the Chabad house in Omaha. It's a converted church that they turned into the Chabad house. You go to the yeshiva in Morristown. It's a former monastery that they bought and then converted into the yeshiva. So there definitely are heterim for it. And those are the examples of, if we go according to Tosfos' first explanation of Bati Avodah Zarah, where you actually have that Alufa Yehuda, which is your Torah, and then nowadays. No, because the building itself is not Avodah Zarah. They use it for worshiping Avodah Zarah. We're not talking about an object itself that was used for Avodah Zarah. We're talking about a building in which Avodah Zarah was worshiped. You want to say something?
But the prophecy about the shuls, is it just in Eretz Israel, or it applies to Chutz
Laaretz? We're talking anywhere in the world. Avodah Zarah is Avodah Zarah. Okay, onward. Amr Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak says, talking further about Roman places in Eretz Israel, Leshem Zupanis, the city of Leshem, which the pasuk describes in Yeshua and Shoftim, that Bnei Don didn't have enough room in their original territory was in the area which is now called Gush Don, around Tel Aviv and Bnei Brak and whatever area. It wasn't enough for them. The Plishtim were occupying most of it. So they went and captured another city in the north of Eretz Israel called Leshem. That is, nowadays, Zupanias, in Rav Yitzchak's time, that place was called Pambas. And nowadays it's called Banyas, because the Arabs can't pronounce a pay sound. But it's one of the sources of the Yadin. Ekron Teoker, again, when we said Ekron will be uprooted, Zukesri Bas Edom, again, as we said, this means Caesarea, the daughter of the outpost of Edom, of Rome. She is a metropolis in Shamalachim, that was the metropolis of the kings. In what sense is that? Some say it means that they would raise the people who eventually are going to be kings and emperors of Rome would be raised and educated over there. The Ikadamri, the Mokmino Malfi. Others say they would appoint the kings over there when they were appointing a new Roman emperor, then they would do the coronation ceremony there in Kesari. So further on this topic, Kesari Yerushalayim, when it comes to Caesarea versus Yerushalayim, and if somebody tells you both of them have been destroyed, al tamin, don't believe it. If they tell you yoshvu shtei, and that both of them are settled and prosperous, al tamin, don't believe either. Chorva kesri, yoshvu yoshalayim, chorva yoshalayim, yoshvu kesri. But if it's one or the other, that kesri is destroyed, and yoshalayim is flourishing, or the other way around, tamin, then you can believe that. Shenemar, as you find that the country of Tsur, which was north of Eretz Yisrael and was in those times very prosperous, says when they were very happy when the Bismikdash was destroyed, they said, Imola ha-charaba, I will be filled up because of the destruction, and was saying the same thing as that was true of Tsur then is true of Kesari in later times. Im malei azu chareva zu, when one is full, the other one is destroyed, because they're polar opposites. Kesari is the anti-Yerushalayim, and therefore you can never have that both of them are in a good way at the same time. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Mehachar. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says you can show that from a pasuk about Yaakov and Esav. Ul'oim mil'oim yamatz. One nation will be stronger than the other. So sometimes Yaakov is stronger, sometimes Esav is stronger. But you never have that both of them are strong at the same time. Further on,
there's never been a time in history when Yaakov was stronger than Esav, Alexander. Sure.
Absolutely. There were times, for example, from the time of David HaMelech until the time of Yehoda HaMelech Yehoda, 8 generations, when the Jewish kings ruled over Edom and then appointed governors over there. Sure, there were. Yeah.
Well, not since the time of Gaulus, anyhow.
Not since the time of Gaulus, fine. But, yeah. Okay, we're not talking about but eventually there's going to be a Moshe Mashiach. Okay. V'amr Abitzach, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk? Yuchan Rosha, let the Rosha have grace shown to him, Chanina from Shemayim, Bal Lomad Tzedek, he has not learned righteousness. So the whole pasuk goes, Yuchan Rosha Bal Lomad Tzedek, Be'eret Nechoiches Ya'avel, in the land he's made the straight things crooked, Oval Yireh, Deus Hashem, let him not see the greatness, the mightiness of Hashem. So what does this pasuk mean? It means, Oma Yitzchak, the Fa'akarish Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shalom, Yuchan Esav. It means Yitzchak is asking Hashem on behalf of his son Esav, Hashem, show favor to Esav. Give him a break. Omalai, Hashem tells him, how could I? Rosha, he's a Rosha. So that's Yuchan Rosha. So in other words, Yitzchak is saying Yuchan, and Hashem is saying Rosha. Yeah, but what do you want from me? He's a Rosha. Omalai Bal Lomad Tzedek. So Yitzchak says, is there nobody who can be Malamed Tzchus on him? Or Marsha seems to say that it means Esav maybe never had a chance to learn Tzedek properly. Omalai, Hashem tells him, yeah, maybe. But Be'eretz Nechoyches Ya'avel, in the land, he's going to make the straight things crooked, meaning he's going to end up destroying the Eretz Yisrael and the Beis Mikdash. Yitzchok says, fine, in that case, in Cain, Bal Yira, Geirus Hashem, fine, then I agree, he should not get to see the greatness and the glory of Hashem because he did such a thing. What does a pasuk in Tehillim mean? Hashem, don't give the Rasha his desires. Zmamay al tafik. Literally, in simple pshat, zmamay means like his plans. So zmamay al tafik means don't allow his plans to come out to fruition. But the Gemara is going to dash in zmamay, meloshin zamam, a muzzle that you put on an animal, or like a nose ring that you put on an animal. So zmamay al tafik yoru musela, that they shouldn't be able to lift themselves up forever. So what does it mean? Omer Yaakov b'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu means this is Yaakov davening to Hashem about Esav, Ribbono Shel Olam, Esav HaRosha Tavas Libay. Don't give Esav the desire of his heart where he wants to take over everything. And when it says Zmamay Al Tofik, don't take out his Zomam, which again, we're saying that Zomam is like a nose ring that you use to be able to pull a very intractable animal around. It means Zu Germamia Shel Edom. This refers to Germamia, which is a part of Edom, Shilmole, Hein Yotzin, if they were to go out from their place, Machriven, Kolayim Kolay, they would destroy the entire world. Now, what is Germania, or Gramamia, or whatever? Rashi just says, Shein Malchus Vina Edom. There is an explanation that it actually means, and maybe even a different Girsa, that it's not Germania, but Germania, meaning referring to the Germans. And therefore, so this is, we see very close to our time, fact of what happened when the Germans went out and nearly destroyed the whole world. So this is the Gemara saying, 2,000 years earlier, that you should realize how dangerous they are for the entire world if they're given free reign. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that Yaakov is asking Hashem, please don't allow that to happen. There are 300 crowned kings, Taga means a crown, that in Germania Shel Edom, meaning they have all their different chiefs and kings and whatnot. Meanwhile, the Romans have 365 Marzavni, which Dukasim, Rashi translates, military leaders. Every day, this group goes out against the other. In other words, every day the Romans and the Germanians are fighting. In the fighting, one or the other of the chiefs or captains or what have you on one side or the other gets killed. And they're busy then with appointing a new king. And in other words, that keeps them from going, that keeps either side, it's like there's kind of like a balance of power between them. That way it keeps either one of them from getting too powerful and destroying the whole world. You look at the Goyish history books, you'll find there were tremendous wars that the Romans fought over and over with the Germans. Eventually the Germans got powerful enough to take over the Roman Empire, but that was after the time of the Gemara. But for a long period of time, there was kind of a stalemate between them where you had just this kind of thing. Sometimes one is winning, sometimes the other is winning, and it kept their minds off harassing the Jewish people too much. Also, Rabbi Yitzchak says, since we're talking about things that if somebody tells you such and such, don't believe them, but if they tell you such and such, believe them. Im yom lecha adam yagaiti, is where we have the pasuk from the 12th sukkim. Im yom lecha adam yagaiti v'loy matzah. See, if somebody tells you, I worked hard, but I wasn't able to find success, al tamin, don't believe them. Lo yagaiti, if he tells you, I didn't work hard, matzasi, and I was able to find success, also al tamin. Yagaiti, matzasi, if he tells you, I worked hard and I found success, tamin, then you can believe him. However, so when the kids say it in the 12th psukim, they stop there. But now we need to learn there are details about that. That applies when it comes to learning Torah, then your guide to your matzasi tam. Avu maso matin, but when it comes to doing business, not necessarily. A person could be your guide and still no matzasi. Siyatu hum enshraya, you need help from Hashem. There's a Gemara in Nida, actually, where it says that the Anshei Alexandria asked with Yeshua a bunch of questions, 12 questions, and one of them was, what should a person do in order to be successful in Mayasan and Biyashir? So first he tells them they should do business honestly. They tell them many people have tried that, they weren't successful. So they say, Yivaka Shrachman Misha Usha Shaloi, you have to dive into the one to whom wealth belongs, to Hashem. And the Gemara says it means you need both. So that's what the Gemara is saying. The same thing over here, that just because you have the idea, you're not necessarily guaranteed success without that tiyat d'shmaya. Ula divrei Torah, lo yamoran, even when it comes to divrei Torah, when we say you're gaiti, you're matzasi tamin, that's only elo l'chadudi. That's to be sharp, to be able to come up with good new ideas and questions and be able to think and be able to draw an analogy from one thing to another. There, you're gaiti, you work hard enough, matzasi. avo, that avo l'ukne girsa, but to keep your learning, that you don't forget it, that's yatim and shmai. For that, you need Hashem's help. Because there, you can have that person is your geya, and he's not moitzer. V'amr Rabbi Yitzchok. Rabbi Yitzchok says another thing. Imra ister rosha shasham sacheches loy. If you see a rosha that the time is smiling for him, meaning he's having a very successful time of it, altis goraboy, don't provoke him. Don't try to start up with him. Shenema altischar b'mereim, as the pasuk says, don't tischar against those who are doing bad. The word one of the meanings of tischar, literally the word tischar is related to the word chora, which means getting upset. So it means, in other words, like don't try to provoke him. Altischar, don't try to provoke the mereim, the ones who are doing bad. And not only you shouldn't try to provoke him, you should realize Hashem may be giving him tremendous success for the time being. What he does will actually be successful. It's a different pasuk in Tehillim says about a Rosha that his ways are always working out, are always successful. Yachilu, Rashi explains, means to be successful. Not only that, even when he gets judged, Min HaShemayim, he sometimes comes out that Hashem favors him and allows him to continue being successful. As the same pasuk in Tehillim continues, Morim was speaking to Hashem, you, the one who are on high, Mishpatecha Minegdoi, your judgment seemed to be like opposite him, like far away from him. Not only that, sometimes you even have such a Rosha who gets to see his enemies be defeated. Usually throughout Tanakh, we have, not for in many places in Tehillim, for example, David asked that he should get to see the punishment of his enemies. That's usually something that a favor that Hashem grants to a tzaddik, that he should see his enemies defeated. Sometimes you have this rosha, shama sachetes, like we're the other way around, where he ends up getting seeing his enemies defeated. Shenemar is the same pasuk until Tehillim finishes, called Sur of Yafiyach Behem. All of his enemies, he blows at them. In other words, like he gives them one puff of breath, and they fall down. So Moses, Amy, is that so? That when you see such a rosha, you should not try to tangle with him. You are allowed to provoke and start up with Roshoyim in this world. Shenemah, you have a pasuk in Mishlei. Those who abandon the Torah praise wickedness. But those who keep the Torah can start up with them. V'tanya, and in fact, we learn in a brisa, Rav Destoy bar Moson Omar, Mutro Leiskaris v'Rishoyim Moelam Azeh. You're allowed to provoke and to start up with Rishoyim in this world. V'im loch shach odom loimau, and if a person whispers to you and says, what about the pasuk that Rav Yitzchak quoted, Al tischa b'mereim, al tekanem ba'oisa Allah, you should know, says Rav Destoy bar Moson, Misha libay noikhoi oimakein. A person whose heart is pounding within him, meaning he's nervous because he has a virus, is going to say like that, Al tischa b'mereim. But if you're Ella, what does it really mean? Altischar b'mereim means lias k'mereim. The word altischar does not mean to provoke them. It means to compete with them. Rashi brings from another pasuk where the word tischar can mean to compete. Don't compete with them, mean lias k'mereim. Don't try to be like them. Don't be jealous of those who do evil, meaning lias k'mereim. Don't be jealous of they're so successful, so I'm going to do the same things as them in order to be successful as well. But it doesn't mean not to start up with them. And in fact, you have another pasuk that expresses the same idea. Your heart should not be jealous of the sinners. And the pasuk finishes off, so obviously that's not talking about provoking them into a fight. That's talking about don't be jealous of them and think, you know what, they're being so successful, let me do the same thing as them. So we see from this thing that this story says that you are allowed to start up with the Rishayim. So how is Rabbi Yitzchok saying you're not? The answer is, it depends whether you're talking about personal matters or things involving Hashem. When it comes to things involving Hashem, when it comes to things involving Yiddishkeit, then you store it up with them if necessary. When it comes to Mividi Day, when it comes to your own personal affairs, if you see that the guy is Misachakas Lai, don't store it up with him. The Iboyisim, or Hova Hova Mividi Day, another possibility is both of them are talking about your own personal matters. You could be talking about a tzaddik gomer versus she'enig gomer. So a tzaddik gomer, in other words, is guaranteed success that the Eidishter will be on his side no matter what, and he'll be able to win out over the Rosh. But a tzaddik she'enig gomer, where after all, you know, we have in Tanya, that a tzaddik she'enig gomer still has a trace of Rav within him, so therefore he may not necessarily be successful against the Rosh. as we see, the Amar Avuna, my dichtiv, what does it mean a pasuk? The Navi Chavakuk complains to Hashem, Lama Sabit Boivdim, why are you looking on about the disloyal ones? He's talking about he's talking about Nebuchadnezzar and his people who are going to come and destroy Eretz Yisrael and this mikdash. How can you look on what they're doing and not do something about it? Tachush, how can you be silent? Bevala Rosha Tzadik Mimenu, when the Rosha swallows up someone who's a greater Tzadik than him, implying Tzadik Mimenu Beleya, somebody who's a relative Tzadik, relative to him, he's a Tzadik, but not a complete Tzadik, Beleya, then sometimes the Rosha might swallow him up. Tzadik Gomer, any Beleya, but a complete Tzadik, the Rosha is never going to be able to swallow up. So therefore, some Tzadik Gomer can go start up with the Rosha and not have to worry about it, but the Tzadik Shein and Gomer should hold back. The Ibori Sema, and a third possibility, Shomas, a Hakas Shiny, it's different when the Rosha has particularly good mazel right now, when the hour is fortunate for him, then you should hold off. So these are three different answers. Rav Yaakov Emden points out that all three of them are true. In other words, that when you have a Tzadik Gomer can always start up with the Rosha. On the other hand, a Tzadik Shein and Gomer, when it's Mili Didei, or when Hashem is Hakas Loi, should be careful.
So
we're not necessarily talking about Tochecha. We might be talking about starting up with him, with them, like, for example, to show that their way of doing things is wrong. Yeah, it could involve giving them Musar if it's appropriate. It could be any of a lot of things. It could be like, so here, for example, I mean, you have, as one example, the Rebbe was never in favor of, used to have, it was popular during the 1950s and 60s to have interfaith debates. You'd have, like the old joke, a priest, a rabbi, and a minister, but instead of going to a bar, they'd be on stage and they'd be debating about the differences between their religions. And the Rebbe was never in favor of that kind of thing. With the exception, they say that the Rebbe allowed Emmanuel Shachat, all of a shalom, to do it. So this would be an example of these goddess with a shalom to start up with them and then, yeah. Okay. Going back to talking about Rome, Oma Ula, Italia Shol Yavan, when we talk about Italia Shol Yavan, which is the area Rashi brings from the Gemara in Shabbos, the famous thing that first came into being in Shlomo HaMelech's time when he married Bas Paroi, that Gabriel stuck a stick into the sea and eventually dirt gathered around it and formed Italia Shol Yavan. Zekrach Godol Shol Rome, specifically that area means the great city of Rome. The Havi Tlasmea Parasa, Tlasmea Parasa. It's 300 by 300 parasa in size. Now, of course, I mean, to a certain extent, this is meant to be metaphorical. The literal city of Rome is not 300 by 300. I mean, maybe the whole Italy is, but the Maharal with this and a lot of other Gemaras explained that these kinds of numbers are meant symbolically. They symbolize, in other words, the tremendous power of Rome. In other words, for example, 3 is the first number that you can really speak of as a whole number, in the sense like you have, 1 is an individual thing, 2 is only a point, 3, 2 is only, is only a line, 3 is the first thing that you have an actual metzius over there, and 100 is, 10 times 10 also represents a certain shleimus, so it represents like Rome has everything that the world, everything that the gashmistic world has to offer, can be found in Italia Shor Yavin, in Krach Godol Shor Rome. There are 365 marketplaces in it, equal to the number of days in the solar year, because we know the power of the goyim comes from the sun. Yisrael moinim l'levana, and then the goyim are moinim l'cha. So therefore, their city is represented, but therefore they have in their city a representation of the sun in that they have 365 markets. We had at the top of the Amud also that we said they had 365 military leaders. Same idea. So again, it doesn't mean that at any particular time you went to Rome, you would actually start counting the marketplaces and literally find 365. It means, in other words, that in Indian, there could be as many as 365, because that's what their metzius represents. They represent the ultimate in gashmis. The cotton shabakola shall moikre, the smallest of all of the marketplaces in Rome is the one where they sell birds. And even that one, the shisha asa mil, even that one is 16 by 16 mil, which is about 10 miles by 10 miles. Umelach soyed b'choyen b'echaman, the king of the Roman emperor, every day he eats, every day of the year he eats in a different one of these marketplaces. V'hadorba, anybody who lives in the city of Rome, af b'shen el noledba, even though he wasn't born in the city, he came from someplace else, notor pras v'esamelach, he gets a present from the king. Or actually, the ba might mean in, not in the whole city of Rome, but in that particular street, in that particular marketplace. So in other words, let's say on this day, the king is visiting this and this marketplace. So anybody who lives there, even if he wasn't born there, gets on that day, they get a special present or a special stipend or whatever from the king. And anybody who was born in that area, even though he's not living there now, also also gets a present from the king. There are 3,000 bathhouses in Rome. The Romans in particular were very famous for their bathhouses. You have the Gemara and Shabbos, for example, where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are talking about what the Romans have accomplished. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda points out the Tiknu Shvakim, Tiknu Mechatzais, they made marketplaces, they made bathhouses. So therefore, all Gemara is pointing out those were the specialties of Rome, their marketplaces and their bathhouses. They have 500 windows to let the smoke outside beyond the city wall. In other words, it actually says this shows the chashivus of the place. They won't allow the smoke from all these bathhouses, all the wood and coal and whatever they had to burn there to darken the city walls. Instead, they had special windows and things set up to be able to direct the smoke outside the city. One side of Italia Shoyovan is surrounded by the sea, but Side Echad Horumukvois, another one is surrounded, it has mountains and hills. Side Echad Mechitza Shobarzel, one side is an iron wall, but Side Echad Chosis Sumatsula, and the fourth side is gravel and depths, meaning swamps. So again, you know, to a certain extent, it's referring to the Gashmiistic city of Rome, and the Gashmiistic city of Rome does have the sea on one side and the mountains of Italy on another side, and so on and so forth. But in essence, we're talking about the Ruchmiistic of Rome, so to speak, but the anti-Yerushalayim, that it has these qualities, it has the ultimate in Gashmius as compared to Yerushalayim is the ultimate in Ruchmius, and it has these and can be described in that way as being surrounded by these various things. One idea is Marshall says at the point that the Gemara wants to stress if you see there's so much riches and power by those who violate and go against Hashem, how much more so there's stored up for the tzaddikim that Hashem has to provide for us. There's also, for example, when we say, for example, that one side of it is Horumuk voice, the Horumuk voice often refers to the Ovis and Imahus. So it means, in other words, part of their greatness comes from the fact that, after all, Esav, Edom, is descended from some of the Ovis and Imahus, from Abraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka. So that gives them a certain amount of their greatness. On the other hand, they have Mechitza Shel Barzel, there's an iron wall separating them from Elikos. And therefore, they have all the good in Gashmias, but they don't have the Ruchmias, and so forth. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Koruas and Megillah ba'Adar Hashin. Suppose that they read the Megillah in Adar Aleph in a leap year, v'nis Abra Hashana, and then it ended up being a leap year. Now, in those times, that could easily happen because the Sanhedrin might not even decide to make an Ibur Yer until after Purim. The halacha is they're allowed to until the end of Adar, until Choftes Adar. So that could conceivably happen. Nowadays, that we have a Loha Kavua, it could happen. Let's say, for example, if Tehillah didn't realize, whatever, the printer has printed them the wrong calendar, and they didn't realize that it's an Ibur Yer. So then, Kodinos of Adersheni, they have to read the Megillah again in Adersheni. And the Mishnah continues, Ein bein Adarish and Adarsheni, there's no difference between Adarish and Adarsheni, Ela Kriyas HaMegillah Matanas Levyonim, with the exception of you read the Megillah only in Adarsheni, and you do Matanas Levyonim only in Adarsheni. So the Gemara starts off, Hold it in state of Parashias. So the implication seems to be that as far as the four Parashias, which we're going to learn about in more detail at the end of Ar Masechta, Shvolim and Zohar and the rest of them, Zeb is Eshavim. Sounds like they're the same thing. In other words, if you read them in Adar Aleph, you don't have to reread them in Adar Beit. The problem with that is, Mani Masnissin, then who is our Mishnah like? Loy Tanakama, Veloy Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi, Veloy Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It doesn't seem to go like any of the Tanoim who addressed at this point. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Koruas HaMegillah Ba'Adar Arishin, suppose they read the Megillah in Adar Aleph, and it's Abra Hashanah, and then it became an Ibrahim, Korinos HaBa'Adar Hashani, so they have to reread it in Adar Sheni, Shekol Mitzvahs Shenoigas B'Sheni Noigas B'Rishin, because all the mitzvahs that apply during Adar Sheni also apply in Adarishin, Chutz mi Mikra Megillah, with the exception of Mikra Megillah. So it sounds like then the Tanakama then is saying that the Dalad Parashi is B'di Ebed. If you read them in Adar Aleph, then it's fine. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, I'm in Kohen Oseh ba'Ad Hasheni. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi says, you b'chlal wouldn't even have to read the Megillah in Ad Hasheni at all. Shekol mitzvahs shenogas b'sheni nogas tradition, because all mitzvahs, without exception, that can apply in Ad Hasheni equally well apply in Ad Rishon, and therefore, if they read the Megillah in Ad Rishon, then that's fine. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over Mishrum Rabbi Yossi, af Kohen Oseh ba'Ad Hasheni. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says in the name of Rabbi Yossi that you do also read the Megillah in Ad Hasheni. Shekol mitzvahs shenogas b'sheni ein nogas tradition, because all the mitzvahs that apply in the second one, not all of them apply in the first one. But the Shavin behest with the Tainis Shasunim is there, all the Chachamim agree that they are equal as far as that Hesped and Tainis are also on Purim Cotton and Shushan Purim Cotton, just as on Purim and Shushan Purim. So, first of all, before we figure out who our Mishnah is like, we have to figure out Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Tana Kama. Isn't Rav Shimon Gamliel saying effectively the same thing as the Tana Kama? The Tana Kama said that you have to reread the Megillah and Ad Hasheni. Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying the same thing. The answer is, Amar Papa say the Parshiyos, and that's it. Rav Papa says the machlokes between them is as far as the Dalet Parshiyos. The Tanakama stava lachatchila b'sheni. The Tanakama holds lachatchila you should be reading them in Ad Hasheni. The e ovud b'rishon ovud. Everything that you should do in Ad Hasheni, if you did it in Ad Rishon, b'dievet is fine. Barring Mikra Megillah, with the exception of Mikra Megillah, the afagav dekoto b'rishon koto b'sheni. That even if they read the first Adar, they have to reread the second Adar. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, Savra, Afilo Mikra Megillah, Vachatchila Berishin. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi holds that even Mikra Megillah, you could Vachatchila do it during Adar Rishin, as the Gemara is going to point out that he holds that Purim Bechlal is an Adar Rishin, when there's two Adars. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Savra, Afilo Seda Parshiyos. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Savra, Afilo Seda Parshiyos, E Koto Berishin, Koto Bershin. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds even the Seda Parshiyos, if they read them in Adar Rishin, then they still have to reread them in Adar Shin. So now that we understand that, and we said that our Mishnah is saying that only Mikra Megillah has to be done over again in Ad Hasheni, but the Dalet Parshiyos is not. Well then, Mani, who is our Mishnah like? E Tanakama Kashi Matonis. If it's going to be according to the Tanakama, the problem is he didn't say anything about Matonis Lev Yonim having to be done during Ad Hasheni. He only mentioned Kriyas Megillah. Our Mishnah also mentioned Matonis Lev Yonim. You can't say our Mishnah is like Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi, because then Mikra Megillah wouldn't work either. He says you could do it in Adar Aleph. On the Chachila, in fact, you should do it in Adar Aleph. And according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the problem is the Seder Parshiyos, where he's saying that you would have to read them again in Adar Sheni, and our Mishnah is implying that not. The answer is La'olam Tanakama. You could answer that our Mishnah is like the Tanakama of that Lysa. The Tanam Mikra Megillah, but who had in Matanas Lev Yonim, Dehaba Hatapia. The answer is when the Brisa says Mikra Megillah, it also automatically includes Matanas Lev Yonim, because those are interdependent. We learned the other day, a Neim Shalaniim Nesuis, the Mikra Megillah, the eyes of the Aniim are raised by Mikra Megillah. They're looking forward to getting their Matanas Lev Yonim. So whenever you lay Megillah is when you do Matanas Lev Yonim. So the Tanakam of the Brisa didn't have to mention that detail because it's assumed that they go together. So therefore, our Mishnah could go like that. The Iboisema, another possibility, La'olam Rav Shimon Gamliel, we could say that our Mishnah goes like Rav Shimon Gamliel, or Masnissin Chasuri Mechsra, we could say that our Mishnah is missing words, but Hachikazoni, what it means to say is, it doesn't mean Ad Rishon and Ad Hasheni as a whole. It means, Ein Ben Arba Oster Shabbat Adar Rishon, L'Yudal Shabbat Adar Hasheni. It means specifically as far as the 14th of Adar Rishon and the 14th of Ad Hasheni, there's no difference Ella Mikra Megillah or Machanas Levyon. Implying Holaigan Hesped and Tainus Zebza Shopping. All the Mishnah is implying is that, as you should know, as far as Hesped and Tainus, they're the same thing. Just like you can't do Hesped and Tainus on Purim, so you can't do it on Purim Cotton. Be able to say the Parshiyos, by mighty. The Seder Parshiyos we're not addressing. The Mishnah is not addressing that difference at all, because not focusing on the whole Ad Rishon and the whole Ad Hasheni, only on the 14th of one versus on the 14th of the other. And the Gemara says, Amr Abkiva Oven, Amr Abyechan, and Hilchas, like Rav Shimon Gamliel, Sha'amr Mishum Rav Yossi. So the Halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, so therefore you do have to read the Seder Parshiyos in Ad Hasheni if you read them in Adar Aleph. Now, we're saying, by the way, that you don't do Hesped B'tainis on your Dalet or Tesvav of Adar Rishon either. So that brings up the question, what about a Chos and Tala if they're getting married on Purim Cotton or Shushan Purim Cotton? Should they fast? So there are, in fact, poskim that say based on this than not. On the other hand, the tainus of a chosin and kala is a very stringent kind of tainus. We say it's not like a regular optional tainus. There's much more of a chiyuv to it than there would be a regular optional tainus. And in fact, therefore, there are posts who say that you would. It's brought that in Tavshin Yud Aleph there was such a kvius. The first year of the Rebbe's Nesius, and it was an Ibur year. A fellow Hirshel Chitrik was getting married, and he asked what to do. He was told that Abanim of that time told him to fast, and then the Rebbe told him essentially, well, since you were told that, then go ahead and do that. So he and his kala did. I myself also, my wife and I also got married on Shushan Purim Cotton, and I asked around the same, and they told me that, and so we also did. So that seems to be, at least in Lubavitch, that the minhag is that in fact you do. But regular tainism, we're talking about, if let's say it was an optional tainus for whatever reason, then you wouldn't do it on your dollar to svab other rishon. Okay. Shabbat shalom, everyone. Huh?